afternoon. My name is Sarah Forrestall, and I'm a doctoral candidate in the Maternal and Child Health Program at the University of Illinois at Chicago School of Public Health. And what I'm going to be talking about today is the use of evidence-based models and standardization in prenatal case management programs. So prenatal case management, as many of you are probably aware, is different from prenatal care in that we're talking about a health-related non-medical service that's designed to get high-risk pregnant women to utilize health and social services. And, of course, the goal of the program is to improve birth outcomes. There has been some research on a couple of different models that have shown to be effective, including the nurse-family partnership model, which includes home visitation by registered nurses. And as such, you can consider this program to be quintessential public health nursing. So some of the studies that are out there do have some limited and anecdotal evidence about a lack of inconsistency in how these programs are implemented in terms of the type of staff that are used in these programs, as well as the sorts of interventions that they're performing with their clients. And some of these inconsistencies might come from a lack of basing these programs in evidence-based models or in theories, or might having programs that do not have formalized standards for practices that the case managers should be following. So the purpose of this study is to investigate some of these issues a little more systematically. We conducted secondary data analysis on surveys that are being collected as part of a larger and ongoing study looking at the structure of prenatal case management programs. So specifically, the questions I'm going to address today are on the extent to which prenatal case management programs are theory-based, as well as the extent to which they have formalized policies and procedures in place. So to do the study, we've focused on Medicaid-reimbursed prenatal case management programs, and we first had to find out which states were doing this. We determined that 32 states are providing prenatal case management through Medicaid. 30 of those states were willing to share their provider lists with us, and then we spent quite a bit of time combining those provider lists and cleaning them up to get them into a form that we could use. In this process, we basically shrunk the list down to a third of what they were originally. And in the end, we invited about 1,000 programs to participate in the study. Questionnaires were sent to program directors who were invited to provide information on the characteristics of their case management program, as well as the organization in which the program resides, the use of evidence that is in the program, and the qualifications and background of the director and their staff. And then for this analysis, I'm going to be focusing on the written policies and procedures in place, as well as what the program directors identified as the evidence base for their models. So the program directors were given the option of either completing a questionnaire on paper or on the internet, and the analyses here are limited to the paper questionnaires. And during the extensive follow-up that we've been using with the program directors, we did uncover several programs that we had invited to participate that are, in fact, not eligible. And so once we've cleaned some of those out of our data set, we're down to about a 35% response rate. As you can see here, we have data from programs in 22 states, but our data collection efforts are ongoing, so we're hoping we'll get some more states represented in our sample. So the program directors who did participate are predominantly women, white. Most of them are registered nurses. Two-thirds of them have a baccalaureate degree or higher, but about a third of them have not gotten a baccalaureate degree yet. And on average, they've been in their position for about 8 years. The programs themselves have been around for quite a while, on average about 16 years. And in our sample, it's predominantly government-based organizations, such as local and state health departments, but we also have health systems and community-based organizations that have provided us data. On average, these programs are employing about 4 full-time equivalents, and as you can see, it's about one-third nurses, about a quarter social workers, and then the remainder is made up of nutritionists, aides, and other health professionals. So one of the questions we asked the program directors is to identify the type of model or theory that they used as the basis for their prenatal case management program. 42% of them said that they're either not using any model at all, or if they are, they have no idea what it is. Among the remainder that did identify a model or a theory, we grouped them into 3 broad categories here based on whether they were picking and choosing from among a variety of different models to put something together for themselves. if they're basing their program on state guidelines, whether they're using their own logic model, and then the smallest group that we have here is actually following a professional nursing model, such as the Nurse Family Partnership. The next question we wanted to address is the types of written policies and procedures that these programs have in place. And so we created a formalization score by asking the directors whether or not they have written policies or procedures in each of 10 areas, and then we summed those up. And on average, as you can see, programs have about five and a half policies in place, and there's quite a bit of range, including some programs that they don't have any written policies or procedures that we had asked about. And as you would probably expect, programs that are larger do tend to be more formalized. So here I'm showing you the 10 different policies and procedures that we had asked about, and as you can see, there's quite a bit of variability in how many of these programs have them. There's a very low percentage that have anything about the maximum number of clients in a caseload or holding case conferences, going all the way up to a great number of them having policies in place about staff education or the number of contacts that they're required to have with their clients. So there are three in here that I do want to highlight. As a research group, we were very surprised that only a fifth of the programs that we surveyed have any written policies about the maximum number of clients that case managers can carry. Very few of them also have written policies and procedures about the number of hours of training required for staff that are hired into these programs. And about 15% of them don't have any written requirements about the education requirement for people that they're hiring. So it's possible that these programs are hiring people who might not have the skills and training necessary to deal with such a high-risk and vulnerable population that they're being asked to care for. So then what we wanted to do is look at these two factors together by asking whether programs that are based on some sort of model or theory are any more formalized than those that are not. And while there is a significant difference here, we're talking about a difference of about one written policy per program. So I'm not sure that that's a substantial difference. Programs that are using a model or theory tend to they're more likely to have written policies about screening for eligibility for new clients, the amount of training that new hires receive, whether or not they have education protocols that are used with the case management clients, and whether or not case managers hold case conferences. So the study does have some limitations that might affect its generalizability. I think the largest one is that we don't have data from every state. Several of them did not want to provide any data at all to us. We had one state-level administrator refuse to have any of the programs in the state participate at all. And then among the states that have been providing us data, we do have a relatively low response rate, so that's something we will be assessing just to see whether we have an issue with bias at all. It's been really difficult to get program directors to take the time to complete the questionnaire, so we've had the survey in the field for quite a while, and so the longer you're in the field, of course, the programs that participated early on, their environment might be very different from the ones who are just now getting around to providing us data. And even though we found that program directors have been in their positions for about 8 years, we've also uncovered quite a bit of turnover in this process. So people leaving their positions has made it difficult for us to continue follow-up with them. And then, of course, we did not ask in this questionnaire about what sort of effects the state requirements or any funding agency requirements might have on what's going on in the programs. So overall, case management programs do seem to be relatively informal in terms of the policies and procedures that they have, which we found surprising because since they're serving such vulnerable, high-risk clients, you'd think that they'd want to have more standardized practices involved. And then we also found an inconsistent theoretical basis across programs, including a large number that either aren't using a model or theory or they don't know what it is. And the ones that are using something, the fact that they're using their own logic model or constructing something from a variety of different theories might reflect their efforts to tailor their activities to the client population they're serving. But of course, then that makes it more difficult to enforce evidence-based practice. There are several implications for this. Of course, not having formalized procedures in place makes it difficult to evaluate effectiveness of case management programs by looking across programs. And, of course, we're not sure how effective these programs might be. Of course, this is an area where state or federal policy might be very helpful in terms of encouraging or promoting evidence-based practice. And several program directors have made comments in the questionnaires that they really wish they had an opportunity to share ideas among themselves. And so perhaps providing that opportunity for them to share what's been effective in their own area might increase their knowledge and motivation to improve their programs. And of course, the ultimate goal of all of that would be to work toward meeting the Healthy People 2010 objectives for birth outcomes. So in the future, it would be great if we could conduct more in-depth interviews with program directors to find out specifically about what's either promoting or inhibiting their use of models. We think that state guidelines might have something to do with it, as well as who's providing the money for these programs, as well as the client and catchment area characteristics in the areas where they serve. And we also like to explore more the relationship between the policies and procedures that these programs have and the birth outcomes for that program. So the study that we use the data from was funded by HRSA, and as you can see, there were quite a few research assistants working on it, and if any of you want more interest and want more information about the study, you can just visit our website. Thank you.
Great, thanks.